like this, I'm surprised anyone's still left in the room. So for my first hour of my presentation, what I want to do is I want to talk about what MoSPA estimation is. I'm only kidding. So I do have to spend some time talking about what this thing means. It's actually motivated to a large extent by some of the stuff that was done in tracking. You've seen particularly the first presentation this morning. What you saw was some people talking about a very interesting talk on the PhD filter. PhD filter is a label agnostic filter. It doesn't care which is which. It doesn't ask the question, where's target one and where's target two? It asks the question, where are their targets? That's really the motivation for dealing with such things. The idea of this goes back a lot further to some work by, let's say, Drummond and people. Actually, even Drummond was noticing other people were doing things. He was saying, well, let's suppose that we have a target tracker, let's say an MHT, a really good target tracker that can track multiple targets, and it's supposed to find the target ones over there and target twos over there, but hey, it's made a mistake. Target twos, its estimate of target two is where target one ought to be, and the estimate of where target one is where target two ought to be. So do you say, at the end of it all, that that's a terrible estimator? Because the error, if target one and target two are a long way apart, could be extremely high. Well, yeah, it's not good. I mean, you're supposed to know where the various targets are. You're supposed to know where target one is. But on the other hand, if your labels didn't necessarily mean all that much at the start, if you're just taking a guess as to which is which, it's not a terrible tracker. So the idea is that, first of all, let's say Drummond, let's put some credit with that, but let's actually give the credit to Schumacher and Vaux, who came up with this OSPA metric, which I'll talk about in a second, came up with a way to measure the performance of trackers that did not necessarily know which target was which, and didn't care which target was which. So here we go. The optimal cell pattern assignment metric is this, and it was a very nice paper by Schumacher Vaux, 2008. They took a generalization of the Drummond thing. Drummond was only in the case where you knew of the right number of targets, basically performed an assignment. The idea, basically, this is very mathematical looking. Let me just talk about it for a second, though. If you assume that target one was here and target two was here, sorry, I'm saying this badly. Here's my fingers. Target 1 is here and target 2 is here. You have estimates that are slightly different from that, okay? Up here and up here. Well, this estimate's close to target 1. You see that where my fingers were? And the estimate 2 is close to target 2. Well, you can compute the squared error of that. You could also compute the cross errors if you exchange the labeling on the targets. Well, intuitively, what you got to do is you got to take the minimum of those two. And that's essentially what this OSPA metric does. It's a bit more general, a little bit more beautiful than that, because it allows for an error in the number of targets and the number of objects that you're estimating. So, indeed, if you estimate that there are four targets and there's actually only three, then you don't get penalized with an infinite spanking. Nor if you estimate that there are only two targets there when there's actually three. So it actually has a clamp, that's actually that number C that you can see there, that maximizes, that upper bounds the amount of penalty you can get for making that sort of mistake. One of the beautiful things about this paper is that it was shown that it was a metric in the mathematical sense. And that's an important thing because that means we can do some extra stuff with it. So that's the optimal sub-pattern assignment idea. In this paper, we're not going to worry about the number of targets estimated being different from the number of targets that are there. And I'm noticing one thing on this slide that I do need to mention, and I'll see if I can get this to work. The states and targets. See this X up here? The X, which does not have a subscript on it, is going to represent the stacked vector of all the states. So if you imagine, for example, like Antonio was doing, where you had four-dimensional states and you had two targets, then this is going to be of dimension 8. And when I talk about exchanging the labeling, I'm talking about exchanging the labeling of the top four with the bottom four in that case. Okay, so I'm not exchanging all the states, only those that correspond to the targets. I'm keeping the ones together that correspond to a particular definition of the state or particular meaning. All right, so the OSP metric is this, and for some reason my co-author, the irrepressible David Krauss, has decided he no longer wants to talk about OSPA, and he made my slides difficult to present by exchanging between OSPA and OE, and I'm going to go back and yell at him a bit later on. But he's called occasionally this is OE for OSPA error, which in this case here, as I was trying to say, is actually the if we know the number of objects that are out there, then I don't have to worry about those extra penalty terms. What I do have to worry about for every collection of estimates is finding the best match between those estimates and the targets. Hey, if you people know about target tracking, data association, what do I do? It's an auction algorithm. It's a two-dimensional assignment problem to figure that out. It's easy, okay? So, for n equal to 2, n equal to 2, sorry, n, just to go back here for a second, n corresponds to, it's not written down here, n in this case corresponds to the exponent and the error. So for n equal to 2, it's a squared error. N equal to 4, which I'm going to be talking about soon, is a fourth power error. Okay, so that's what the meaning of n is. So one can talk about minimizing the OSPA. Let's talk about that in a second, though. I would like to draw your attention to something which will expand your minds or blow your minds or just generally annoy you. This is some parallels you might want to take between traditional estimation and what I want to talk about. Okay, traditional estimation, and when I talk about traditional estimation, I mean basically labeled estimation. Then I would have a measure, which would be the squared error in many of the cases that we're interested in. Let's talk about unlabeled estimation, unordered estimation if you prefer. In that case, the measure of the performance for a particular outcome is going to be the OSPA. Why not? That sounds good. Well, the criterion when we're coming up with a good estimator is to minimize, is the mean squared error. That's the measure of goodness of our estimator, whatever it is, in traditional labeled estimation settings. Remember, for multi-object estimation, things are more complicated, and if I choose not to worry about my labeling, then I'm going to be dealing with the criterion of the mean OSPA or MOSPA. Now, that's just got one M to it. Now, if I want to talk about good estimators, in the traditional sense, I'm going to talk about the minimum mean squared error estimator, MMSE, or MMSEE, which isn't very much more pronounceable than the minimum mean OSPA measure estimator, which is what I want to talk about today. And that's what I kind of want to popularize as well. I hate that acronym. I've wrestled in vain with my co-authors to make it a little bit more pronounceable, and I tried to suggest MIMOSA to them, but they still are sticking around with MOSPA. So there we go. MOSPA, everybody. Where's it at? Where's it a useful thing? Well, what I want to do is I want to proselytize for just a little bit because of this. If you imagine that your estimation problem is actually an optimization problem, okay, so the optimization is an optimization of the criterion. Mean squared error is what you're used to, but in this case, it's MOSPA. The criterion is the distance, the measure that you want to have the best you can get. The mean squared error, for example, is what you're traditionally used to dealing with. The labeling to say, okay, target one's there, target two there, or if you'd like that the stat vector, the first four elements is target one, the second four elements is target two, that, if you expand your mind a little bit, you could think of as a constraint. What if you got rid of that constraint? Imagine you're doing the estimation now. Imagine you're doing optimization and you've removed a constraint. Are you going to do worse than you did with the constraint? Well, you can't do worse, and my claim is, and there are some results showing this, and unfortunately not in this presentation, showing that you actually can do better in terms not just of MOSPA, which is kind of a fake if you're the general, if you're worried about actually shooting down some planes, but in terms of real measures, as in what I just said there, shooting down some planes, you can actually show you can do a little bit better in terms of your estimation. Your kill probability will be higher by removing that constraint. So think about it. I removed a constraint, I can do a little bit better. Okay, hallelujah. Different things you can think about here. We have some work which has been submitted. I hope that'll be accepted. It's invited for super resolution of DOAs because the direction of arrival estimation, you can consider that to be unlabeled because who the heck knows which is which. And in multi-target tracking, it's perfectly aligned to talking about things like the PhD and other kind of set-based methods. Well, here is really our motivation. This is where we started doing this stuff. This was presented back in the Fusion Conference in 2009, and this was where we first came across the idea. Now, the set in this case refers to set in the Mahler sense, the random finite set sense. On the left, we see an example of two targets. So you can see one of them coming in from the top left, one of them coming in from the bottom left. Bottom left in the black one. Those are track colors. Coming together for a while and eventually separating. And the red and the black correspond to the tracks that we get from them using our JPDAF estimator. There's probably a couple of you in the audience, don't worry, don't be embarrassed, who don't know what a JPDAF is. So let me just give you a very quick sketch of it. JPDAF is trivial. Just like it's, a lot of these trackers are trivial when you hear them explained easily. The problem is always in the implementation of it. The JPDAF basically is a scan-by-scan MMC estimator. Basically, you start off with a Gaussian prior for the joint Gaussian prior for the targets, if you do a coupled version, and you create a multi-mode Gaussian posterior corresponding to all the associations. In the case, for example, I had two targets and two measurements, I have a bimodal posterior, which corresponds to this association or this association. Could be both of them, right? And then the JPDAF says, I'm going to take those two modes of my Gaussian posterior, and I'm going to blend them according to a minimum mean squared error estimate. I'm going to find the mean, and then I'm going to find the covariance of it, and then I'm going to pretend that that was just a Gaussian error ready for my next estimation. All right, so what if you weren't to do that? What if you were to use a MOSPA estimator at each stage? Well, then you come up with something called the SetJPDAF, or SJPDA. That's the thing that you see down in the bottom. The SetJPDA uses a MOSPA posterior estimator and is label agnostic. It doesn't take any care which is which. And hey, if you'll notice very quickly here, the performance, not quickly, let's spend a while with it. The performance on the left is a very representative performance of the JPDA. In this case here, we actually have very high probability detection. I don't even know if we have any clutter at all. It doesn't particularly matter in this case. I think maybe we do have some clutter because of the fact what happens at the end there. So let's see what happens. The JPDA comes together, and because MMSE estimators hedge their bets, and I'll talk about that in a second, the MMSE estimators they coalesce in the middle. They're not able to track the targets separately. That's bad. And at the end, the targets are not able to separate until the evidence becomes overwhelming and they got to separate. Bad performance. The SJPDA, on the other hand, because of the characteristics of the OSPA metric, you're able to put one target on top of or one estimated target roughly on top of where the targets are. You're not forced to be in the middle. You're not going to be liable to coalescence in the same sense. But what you'll notice, by the way, right at the beginning, same as over here, right at the beginning, there is an exchange of label. Does the OSPA metric care about that? No. Does the operator care about that? Perhaps. And yes, I can do something with labeling as an overlay to this, but I'm not going to talk about this in this talk. But yeah, it makes a mistake, but it doesn't lose the tracks, and that's the good thing about it. Okay, so let's keep going. Forget the tracking for a second. I've been yakking about tracking. Hey, that's good. I should make a poem about that. I want to talk only about estimation. And what I want to do is I want to do MMOSP estimation. And if you can see from the form of this estimator, form of the estimation problem, this guy here, within the integral, you have to choose the best ordering of the objects you're trying to estimate. That's a hard integral to solve, okay? It's not going to be something you can do very easily. And the point of this talk is to come up with a way to approximate that, to come up with reasonable performance. In the Fusion 2010 conference, we did a couple of things here. And one of the things that's most interesting is we showed that, in fact, the MMOSPA estimate was the MMSE estimator for a specific adulterated joint density function. We're calling it P tilde. I'll give you a hint about that in a second or two. Actually, there's a paper which I presented earlier on here where yesterday's poster, where for a special case is an explicit solution for that. Not important in this case here. I want to do something a bit more general. So what specific random finite sets density are we talking about? It's the one down below where basically you need to reorder, for every x, you need to reorder the targets, reorder the labels, MMOSPA, well, it basically corresponds to minimizing the distance between where you expected to be and where it was for every x. Now, a little hard to do, but at least in theory it can be done. However, well, this is this is important. What that means is that if you want to get the MMOSPA estimator, you have to find that density, and then you do the traditional conditional expectation like you would do for the minimum mean square error estimator. It works. Okay, so once you got that thing, you can use the traditional easy technique. Easy, well, okay. So how do you do it? Well, even approximating that estimation isn't all that easy, isn't all that trivial. So, for example, if you knew how to do these things, if you knew how to reorder these density functions, you could create something that looks rather like equation 10, even with a markup chain Monte Carlo technique, where you had importance weights of the we're calling W's here, or David would prefer to talk about discretizing the density, which of course you can't do in any kind of dimensional space at all. You could come up with either a batch or, in fact, although it's not written down here, a recursive way to figure out what the MMOSPA estimator is in an arbitrary situation. It's a little bit difficult, and by the way, that equation 11 is after a certain amount of mathematics, canceling out terms which don't matter. So don't worry too much about it. My bottom line message here is that in the raw sense, it's very difficult. Am I getting done? 2 minutes left. Okay, so I have only 82 slides left, so I'll go through them all very quickly. Okay, everybody, put on your glasses. All right, here's the deal. I'm actually going to talk about the new stuff here, which means I'm not going to talk about that. What I want to get you here is to think about the concept of the mean MMSE estimation, MMOSPA estimation. Here's the case of the mean for a bimodal density function. You'll see how the full PDF looks a little bit like that. The mean, of course, is in the middle. That's what you'd expect it to be for a bimodal density function. This is what you see on the right is the marginalized case, where you're basically projecting things onto either one of the two axes. For the random finite sense densities. For the MMOSPA estimate, you get much better performance. You get one of the modes. It doesn't matter which mode, because you don't care which mode, because they are interchangeable. That's the whole point. And so that the MMOSPA estimator is much better. What we're going to talk about here is what we normally talk about is for n equal to 2. That's mean squared error. I'm going to talk about here the case for n equal to 4. That's where the error has the fourth power in it. And it turns out to be much easier to work with because... Where am I getting this here? Oh, this is with the Chernoff bound. I can make a Chernoff bound to get it trivially in the Gaussian mixture case. So here's the thing. We're going to use the standard, actually, David wants to call it Chernoff. I'll call it Bhattacharya bound because it's got a fixed exponent in it. If we split the exponent between the two terms in this, we can end up by minimizing not exactly the quantity we want, but a bound on the quantity, and we can come up with some explicit answers like this, which give us exactly the answer that we need to get, and we have explicit solutions in the Gaussian mixture case for this, not of what we normally want, but hey, we get some very good performance, and this is sort of basically the last slides here, for toy cases showing that we get, in this case here, x1 and x2 are scalar objects, one's over on the right, we're getting something like the correct performance. Here you can see we're in the middle. The mean is in the middle, right in the middle of everything. We don't want that. For the unlabeled case, we're getting very close to the most per estimate with n equal to 2. And that's basically that. I told you I'd go to the last minute quickly. Oh, boy. Thank you. Yeah, Gary. Do I need to know the number of objects? In the implementation, in the mathematics we've looked at here, yes, we do. If we're looking for two objects, we have to know that there are two objects out there. I was actually thinking about this earlier this morning, wondering if there would be a way to extend this to the case of a more general distance function, more general OSPA. Haven't got a clue right now, but it sounds like an interesting problem.
Okay, let's thank the speaker again. Okay.